If everyone will stand, we will read Deuteronomy chapter 23, verse 2. A bastard who is a mixed breed shall not enter into the congregation of Yahweh. Even to the tenth generation shall he not enter into the congregation of Yahweh. You may be seated. In the first part of this message, entitled In the Beginning, I talked about the fact that I was not a Roman Catholic or a Judeo-Christian. I did mention that the Roman Catholic Church is at the head of the caste system that lays claim to most of the land and owns one half of all the money in the nations of the West. Roman Catholicism is a spiritual guardian of the souls of the individuals who are members of their church. And they tell them that when they die, their souls will go to a place called purgatory. This place is located in Netherland, somewhere between heaven and hell. A soul stays there for a length of time, depending on the enormity of one's sins while alive on earth. A soul could remain in purgatory for centuries. Their members are also told that the prayers offered up by their Catholic family, members, and or friends could help get these souls out of the middle-of-the-road place, but these prayers may take many years. To make sure the prayers work, many of the devout agree to surrender their claim to their estates to the church upon their death. In this manner, the church guarantees the prayers so that the souls can be released from purgatory. The church receives much property in return. Next in the caste system are number two, the warriors and the kings. Number three, followed by the merchants and farmers. Number four, followed by the peasants and the laborers. And fifth, the last being the untouchables, those whose occupation requires them to handle unclean objects. I am also not a member of any Judeo-Christian church. These churches are the most successful foreign mission churches in the West in the last several hundred years. They were created by the Unholy Seed, who also make up the International Trade Cartel, and they made this religious movement an ecumenical Christian sect. Its purpose was to dissolve Christian religious objections to the presence of international merchants. This was accomplished by giving media access and its accompanying riches to Judeo-Christian ministers who favor international trade cartel policy. Because of this anti-Christian movement, the Judeo-Christian churches have been persuaded to not oppose the international trade cartel. As a result, the Christian West has crumbled into a nation having many gods. They also believe that they have free will to choose God for their salvation, that all races have the same opportunity to choose their salvation, that once they have chosen salvation, it's possible for them to lose it. They believe in integration, in miscegenation, that in usury on loans is permitted, that America is the melting pot of the world, that its people should be taxed, that all religions should not be criticized, that the Jews, Ashkenazic, Sephardic, Hasidic, Reform, etc., are God's chosen people and are under another plan for salvation, and so forth. Judeo-Christianity is a recent movement that has taken over most of the Christian churches in America. Jews are accepted and can be members of these churches, but how many Christians are invited to join the local synagogue? Jews are welcome to even speak at a Judeo-Christian churches, or serve on the board of deacons, or to be an usher, or even to be its pastor. But are Christians welcome to speak or serve in leadership roles or even usher in a synagogue? Now for today's lesson. Blessed be the Lord God of Israel. I am not a Hindu Christian or a Buddhist Christian. What is so surprising about this statement? Aren't all Christian unbelievers in the pagan religions of Hinduism or Buddhism? Hinduism and Buddhism doctrines have crept into Christianity, much like Judeo-Christianity has, making many churches Hindu-Judeo-Christian churches. Most churches in America are therefore a combination of all three religions, Hindu, Judeo, Christian. These churches think they are Christian churches, but they believe doctrines which originated from the Hindu and Judaic holy books and not from the word of the Bible. For example, I do not believe in Dharma or reincarnation, two of the most important doctrines in Hinduism. Do many Christians today believe in these two ancient doctrines? Dharma only asks that its followers adopt two simple beliefs. Number one, all gods are basically the same. And number two, since all gods are basically the same, there is no reason not to tolerate all religions without regard to race, creed, or national origin. True Christianity teaches that there is only one capital G God. Hinduism boasts that it believes in all the gods of the world. Allah, Jesus, Thor, Muhammad, Buddha, Odin, Shiva, etc. For they believe that all gods are just the reincarnation of their basic gods. The one world belief that all gods are basically the same is a basic Hindu doctrine. Quote, surveys show that most Protestants, along with the Pope and the liberal Roman Catholics, maintain that members of other religions, such as Islam and Judaism, all worship the same God Christians worship, but call him by a different name, unquote. That's from the Christian News, May 18, 1992, page 1. But true Christianity, for example, Christian identity, is marked for destruction. These Christian people have always rejected other gods. They are either Christian or nothing else. This racial trait is the reason they have been condemned to death or ostracized. Exodus chapter 20, verses 2 and 3. I am Yahweh, thy God, which hath brought thee out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. Thou shalt have no other gods before me. Thou shalt have only one God, the God that brought the Hebrews out of Egypt, the God that was your husband, the God that was your king, the God that was your kinsman redeemer, the God that is your mediator, the God that is your racial brother, the God that is your savior, the God that loves you, the God that punishes you when you ignore his holy laws, the God that divorced you, the risen God that is your husband. Hinduism says to tolerate all religions and all their gods. They reason religions are telling people different ways to get to the same place. So why should there be any criticism of them? Why don't all religions and individuals just tolerate and coexist with all the religions and gods that they encounter? But how many Judeo-Christian church members would put this sign on their car bumper? Very few of them would object. In fact, I've seen many bumpers with this sticker attached. Would the God of the Bible be pleased with this open display of this doctrine? Does the first commandment say that we are to worship one God only? Coexist just tells everyone whose God you are obeying. And there's the bumper sticker. A man approached me at work and identified himself as being a Hindu. His name was Raj, and he was an Indian, a person from the country of India. He started the conversation by asking me how my company determined who was off on the Christmas holidays. I answered that it all depended on what days you were regularly off. If it fell on the day Christmas was celebrated, then you were off. If not, then you were working that day. He then said something that was unusual for our short conversation. He said, "I believe in Jesus Christ. I believe that he was God's prophet," unquote. That statement didn't shock me in the least, as Hindus believe in everyone's God, for they believe that all other gods are the reincarnation of their basic gods. I just answered, "You believe in reincarnation." The Hindu was shocked. The expression on his face was one of fascination, as he didn't expect such an answer. He replied, "You know that we believe in reincarnation?" They know what my job is. He then told me that he was a professor at the University of Cincinnati and that he and his family were going to Florida for a vacation. A little while later, I saw him and his family in the gates. He was there with his wife, children, and his brother, who still lives in India, and his parents. They were going to Sarasota, Florida, to spend some vacation time over the Christmas holidays. His body reactions revealed to me that he wanted to talk some more to find out what more I knew about the Hindus, but he didn't have the opportunity. Hinduism and Buddhism all teach that each person is on a journey to godhood. Oh, that's the same concept as Mormonism. That's the same concept as the lie that the serpent told that convinced Eve in the garden. How they live their lives determines in what form or status they will be reincarnated after their death. If they improve themselves and get closer to Brahma, their creator god, they will be born in a higher caste family. But if they commit evil while they are alive, they'll be born in a lower caste family and might even be born in an animal or insect family. But they will be reincarnated. Most Hindus alive today have been reincarnated over 100 times already. That is why Hindus do not kill any animals, unless it is by accident, for they might step on evil grandpa, who might have been reincarnated as a roach, or if it was not him, it would certainly be someone else. Everyone's main goal in Hinduism is to reach a state of godhood. What is the significance of India? If I asked you what country lies midway between the world's two principal markets, China and the West, historically this country occupies the most strategic important trading area in the world. Well, that country is India. Products transported by Indian merchants going to and from China and to and from the West use the overland spice route and the sea routes. India is the most important point on the east-west trade. Question: could the country of India trade with a true Christian separatist nation? Could China? No. True Christianity teaches that a Christian nation is forbidden to make any covenant with the unholy seed countries. They are banned from having any trade with them. Why? If they begin to trade with them, they'll begin to learn their ways. They will, for example, become in favor of being an integrationist and not a separatist. They will ignore the laws of God. But we are now trading with them. We trade with China, India, Japan, Vietnam, Philippines, Israel, Mexico, and so forth. So we are learning the ways of their God or gods. Judaism has only been in existence for a little more than 2,000 years. Question. What religion did the Kenites, the father of the Canaanites, and other enemies of ancient Israel have who were living up to 6,000 years ago? Israel only began around 4,000 years ago when Jacob's name was changed to Israel. Christianity is only around 2,000 years old. What did the Kenites believe that was so different from what the people of God believed? The first world age was destroyed by the waters of the flood during the days of Noah. The first age lasted less than 1,700 years. What happened? The people of God had committed the terrible sin of race mixing, plus a host of other kinds of sin. They were almost wiped out. Only 8 people left of the pure seed of the woman. And it wasn't just God's people who mixed their seed, but many of the animals and plants became hybrid too. The whole period from the creation of Adam to the flood of Noah is discussed in only the first 9 chapters in the Bible. There is a lot of information that is not explained in the Bible. How advanced were they in their technology? Did they have the ability to fly in airplanes? I do not know. But we could surmise that the Kenites taught race mixing. God's law taught being separatist, that is, marrying only a person of another gender who is in your own seed line. Well, let's go back to this question. What is the oldest religion in the world since the creation of Adam? Well, number one, it's not Christianity, where it's only around 2,000 years old. Christianity is the new covenant, not the old covenant, of God's holy people, descendants of Jacob, Israel. Number two, well, it's not Judaism either, for it's only 2,200 years old. It was the descendants of Esau who became the first Jews. And number three, it's not Islam, for it's only been around 1,300 years. Neither Cain nor Abel were any of these three. They weren't a Christian, they weren't a Jew, and they weren't a Muslim. Even Abram wasn't any of these three. But Abraham was the beginning of a special people of God. Because Abram kept God's holy laws, God made an unconditional, everlasting covenant with him, that's Hebrews 13:20, and his grandson Jacob's seed. The Bible is the story of this group of people. But what is the oldest religion in the world, besides God's holy ways? It's Hinduism. Hinduism is how old? It is one of, if not the oldest religion in the world, about 6,000 years old. What? Almost 6,000 years old? How long ago was the flood of Noah? About 4,500 years ago. So, Hinduism is older than the flood of Noah. Who was alive when Hinduism was in its infancy? Adam, Seth, Methuselah, and even Noah. Adam lived 930 years. Methuselah lived 969 years. Noah was 600 years old when the flood occurred. These four people were the faithful of God's seed line. None of them, all the faithful progenitors of God's family, believe what Hinduism teaches. So who believed it? No one knows who originated this religion. But could Cain have been one of its initiators, or did he join in the worship of the Hindu gods? Cain lived 730 years, according to the Book of Jubilees. The Bible says that the Creator put a mark on Cain, a sign, so that everyone would recognize him and would not hurt him. Some ancient Jewish legends say that this sign was a horn on his forehead. A horn on the forehead signifies power, power that comes from the Spirit, power that distinguishes him from other men. This callus on his forehead signifies that the Spirit has freed itself and taken possession of the body, hardening it and spiritualizing it. But was Cain really turned into a two-legged unicorn? Maybe the Lord put a red dot on Cain's forehead. For the Hindus believe in two basic doctrines that would keep Cain safe from punishment for his recent murder. Number one, the Hindus believe that they're on a journey to godhood. And number two, they do not believe in capital punishment for murder, rape, or kidnapping. They don't believe in capital punishment as the penalty for anything. Murder, rape, kidnapping, etc. Why? Because they believe that they're on a journey to godhood. Reincarnation. If they execute anyone, the deceased would have no chance to perform good deeds so that he could be reincarnated in a higher form. The red dot, which is called the Bindu, would signify that the people that Cain went to did not believe in capital punishment, so he wouldn't be killed for murdering his half-brother. Their immortality would continue as they would be reincarnated as someone else or something else until they finally reached the state of godhood. Now I've got a picture of Shiva. That's one of the gods. What's this over here? Oh, a serpent. On the other side, the serpent. Look at the middle of her forehead. Brahma, who's the creator god. Shiva is the avenging and destroying god. Vishnu is the preserver god and protector of life. And there's some other gods that they have. And look at all these. How many serpents do you see in this picture? My goodness. There must be 50 of them. I don't know. When you look at a Hindu god, you almost always find a serpent. Hindu worship is represented by the serpent. The snake sheds his skin and is reborn. The Hindu sees it as reincarnation, an example of immortality. Eve was deceived by a serpent. Did the serpent teach her this false doctrine? The serpent is always presented as the enemy of the word. All the main gods of India have a serpent or serpents near them. Why is that? Are there pictures of Jesus the Christ that have serpents crawling all over him? I haven't seen one. Why? Is the serpent being near you a good thing or a bad thing? It should be a warning sign to the Bible reader. Ralph Waldo Emerson, Henry David Thoreau, Walt Whitman, Louisa May Alcott, all taught Hindu themes in their writings. We all read some of the books written by these authors in high school. I did. As early as the 1820s, Emerson wrote of India in his journals. By the 1830s, he had copies of Hindu sacred texts. He was especially attracted to the books that taught the unity of spirit, linking the human soul and the transcendent. Thus, Emerson and his circle came to be called transcendentalists because of their emphasis on the transcendent oneness of spirit. By the 1840s, Emerson began to publish excerpts from what he called the Ethical Scriptures and the Transcendentalist journal, The Dial. Cremation. Hinduism believes that a person is the sum of his past lives. And when he dies, he will be reborn as another human or animal to continue his odyssey until he gets his life right. This is his karma. The result is a veneration of all living things and an absolute refusal to kill the smallest animal if possible. There are cases where people starved while cows grew fat. It is difficult not to attach too much importance to reincarnation. The caste system, or feudalism, and reincarnation permeates Indian life. A devout Indian will have his body burnt at death rather than have it placed in the ground where worms will feed upon it and, after having consumed it, starve. The starvation death of the worms will rest on the head of the departed who did not decide to have his body cremated. In America, have Christians switched from burial to cremation? In 1960, there were only 3% of all Americans who practiced cremation. And about 60 years later, almost half of the Christian population have opted for this last choice in their life, cremation. One reason is economics. It is cheaper to have one's body cremated rather than buried. The other is the hidden teachings of Hinduism. God warned his people to be separate, or they would learn the way of their enemies. Hindus always cremate their bodies. Christians for centuries never did until recently. What does the Bible say? In Joshua chapter 7, verse 25, and Joshua said, "Why hast thou," referring to Achan, "troubled us? The Lord shall trouble thee," referring to Achan, "this day." And all Israel stoned him, Achan, with stones, and burned them, Achan and his family, with fire, after they had stoned them with stones. Joshua, the leader of Israel, solved the case of Achan, the one who disobeyed God's command and stole the Babylonian garment, with the help of God, and gave the judgment upon him and his accomplices, his family. They stoned Achan and his family, and they burned them. This is one case where Israelites burned other Israelites. But even though they burned Achan and his family after they were first stoned, it wasn't really cremation, because the fire that burnt the bodies was not hot enough to turn the bodies into ashes. They demonstrated to their God that they were displeased with the sin Achan that he had committed and hid. Their action turned Yahweh from the fierceness of his anger, Joshua 7:26. All other references are where they buried their dead many times in the same place where their fathers had been buried. I'll tell you about Joseph. When he was the leader of God's people in Egypt, he didn't want to reside there forever. He gave instructions to the future leaders of Israel that when they were to be freed from Egypt, to take his corpse with them and bury him with his fathers. They did this 144 years after they had made the oath. It's found in Genesis chapter 50, verses 25 and 26. And Joseph took an oath of the children of Israel, saying, God will surely visit you, and ye shall carry up my bones from hence. So Joseph died, being 110 years old, and they embalmed him, and he was put in a coffin in Egypt. And then in Exodus chapter 13, verse 19, and Moses took the bones of Joseph with him, for he had straitly sworn the children of Israel, saying, God will surely visit you, and ye shall carry up my bones away hence with you. Moses obeyed what Joseph had commanded the Israelite leaders to do when they had the opportunity to leave Egypt. Don't forget to take him with them. Joseph had died, was embalmed, and he was taken with the Israelites to be buried with his fathers. Hindus believe in reincarnation. Immediately after death, they are reborn into another human being or animal. Their old body will not be resurrected. So it is best, they think, if it's destroyed. Christians believe their body will be resurrected in the same manner as their Savior was. Thus, their body is important even when dead. The next is transcendental meditation. Transcendental meditation is also very old, well over 5,000 years. It is also Hindu in origin. It is the heart of the yoga system and an important part of the science of life, the world's most ancient system of natural health care and personal development, besides God's holy command to his people. In the 1950s, however, a major revival of interest in meditation began when Maharishi Mahesh Yogi traveled throughout India and around the world several times to reestablish the original understanding of meditation as a simple, effortless flow of the mind towards happiness. Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, one of the leaders of transcendental meditation, a revolutionary in the world of yoga teaching, described himself as an engineer sent to repair a road. People's experience of the mind's natural tendency to be active had been leading them into efforts to control it, forgetting that it is also the nature of the mind to be still when given the opportunity. Since 1958, millions of people have discovered learning transcendental meditation, that the most effective, most advanced meditation, being the most effective, is actually the simplest and can be practiced by anybody. Did our God fail to tell us about this method? Learn not the ways of the heathen. Now, I had a very interesting deal with transcendental meditation. I'll tell you about it. While I was teaching high school in the greater Cincinnati area in the 1990s, our whole school system, faculty, administrators, and aides, had at their annual meeting a representative come and lead all the members of the school system in a display of transcendental meditation. The representative said that there were many companies and schools they were having periods of transcendental meditations planned throughout the day. They set aside a certain time of the day where their laborers or students all practiced this form of meditation. He told of all the benefits that one could receive from doing it, and then he had everyone at the meeting practice the procedure. Here's what he did. He instructed us. Everyone at the meeting, the whole auditorium was full of people, to close our eyes and think of a good time we had had in our past. or to think of a beautiful location that we had seen, or something that we wished to do, and just empty all other thoughts. He talked in a very calming, soothing voice that almost put us to sleep. We did this for about 20 minutes. Thankfully, this practice did not catch on at the school system. Listen to this. For Hinduism's fundamental goal is to escape the cycle of reincarnation and thereby to erase the illusion of personal existence, eventually becoming one with Brahma, God. How many Hindus have reached this goal? How many are now gods? Transcendental meditation helps the Hindu become a god. What need would a Christian need of this ritual? We don't believe in reincarnation. Christianity believes in death, followed by the resurrection. Oh, yoga. Actions committed in past lifetimes result in present events, karma. Release from the cycle of death and rebirth is accomplished by a practice called yoga. Liberation from the cycle is the core of Indian philosophy. Yoga practices are supposed to subdue and train mind and body to the end that the individual no longer needs to be reincarnated, and can merge with the Brahma God. There's a yoga class at the YMCA this summer. Swami Vivekananda, I can't say his name right. He was a key figure in inducing Vedanta and yoga in Europe and the United States, raising interfaith awareness and making Hinduism a world religion. Most of its practices are practical. Some, in fact, are quite beneficial. Its devotees may sit and hum in unison to develop close attention and harmony. What are they doing? Oma is the name of the spouse of Shiva. That's the girl with the two big snakes. The mother goddess, whose other name is Kala, the goddess of death. To reach the divine spirit, one must have a perfect master to lead and teach him. There is no direct communication with a god. One must reach him through a mediator. Yoga helps the Hindu reach his journey's end. He becomes a god. Jesus the Christ is our mediator. Accepting an earthly master to direct one to the way forces one to accept the teachings of the master as revelations from God. Any type of divination is also forbidden to Christians because it too can become a master. Deuteronomy chapter 18, verses 10 and 11. There shall not be found among you anyone that maketh his son or his daughter to pass through the fire, or that uses divination, Ouija boards, tarot cards, fortune telling, or an observer of time, oh, the horoscopes, or an enchanter, hex or voodoo, or a witch, witches and witchcraft, or a charmer, that's potions, or a consultant with familiar spirits, a fortune teller, or a wizard or a necromancer, that's contact with the dead. The Beatles, remember them, are one of the groups that brought more than just sex, drugs, and rock and roll to the United States. They brought that old religion that maybe even Cain believed, but they snuck it into Christianity. They changed mainstream American society to a more Hindu society. Didn't they say that they were more popular than Jesus? And there's a picture of them. with Maharishi Mahesh Yogi. Lennon and his bandmates arrived in India in February 1968. That's 51 years ago. With their wives, girlfriends, assistants, and several reporters. They stayed in the Maharishi's ashram, which is a place of religious retreat for Hindus, though not longer than 2 to 3 months, and the time spent there is credited to be their most productive phase. Lennon and McCarthy co-created several of their songs there, as so did Harrison. Starr created his first song during this stay. The band claimed to have created 48 songs in this phase. I wonder what songs they were. I wonder how many I sang along with. Lennon, who was accompanied by his first wife, Cynthia, engaged in communal dining, vegetarian meals, can't eat meat because that might be something they know, and yoga. Yoga. Later, John Lennon divorced Cynthia and married his second wife, Yoko Ono, who was Japanese. It was a mixed marriage. A couple of years after the Biggles returned from their trip from India, where they spent time with the guru, he wrote this song with the help of his wife. Yoko Ono was given more credit for writing the song than John Lennon was. After he didn't give him any credit for a long time, but he said that's what happened. It is figured to be one of the top songs of all rock and roll history. I think it's listed number 3. Let's look at Exodus 23, verse 32 and 33. Thou shall make no covenant with them, that's racial strangers, nor with their gods. They shall not dwell in thy land, lest they make thee sin against me. For if thou serve their gods, it shall surely be a snare unto thee. The song is Imagine. It's by John Lennon, and most of the words is written by Yoko Ono. Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try. No hell below us, above us only sky. Imagine all the people living for today. So no heaven or hell. Is there a purgatory? Imagine there's no countries. It isn't hard to do. Nothing to kill or die for, and no religion too. Imagine all the people living life in peace. You may say I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one. I hope someday you'll join us and the world will be as one. Imagine no possessions, I wonder if you can. No need for greed or hunger. A brotherhood of man. Imagine all the people sharing all the world. You may say I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one. I hope someday you'll join us and the world would be as one. If you believe this song, would you be classified as a Hindu Christian? You wouldn't be a Bible-believing Christian. Cain was alive and was living in the area where Hinduism was practiced. Was Cain a Hindu? I don't know for sure. But if you live with the Hindus, they would not put him to death for murder, and that would support him and would support him in the journey to godhood. But isn't it strange that in these last days, the religions of the East are swallowing up the religions of the West? But if you say that you do not believe like the pagan Hindu does, and yet you do some of the following. Do you practice cremation? Do you practice yoga? Do you practice transcendental meditation? Do you practice tolerance towards all gods? Do you practice tolerance towards all other religions? Do you practice usury on bank loans? Do you practice that the church or state owns your property? Do you practice that the church or state receives your taxes? Do you practice that the land can be bought and sold forever? Do you practice the belief that there is no heaven or hell? Do you practice the belief that there are no countries? Do you practice the belief in the third eye? In Egypt, it was known as the eye of Horus. In Freemasonry, it's the all-seeing eye. In India, it was the third eye, the chakra. The bindu, or red dot, is the point or dot around which the mandala is created. Do you practice the belief in the brotherhood of man? All races are brothers. There are no racial strangers. Do you practice the belief that all murderers, rapists, kidnappers, etc. are not guilty of a capital crime? No death penalty at all. Do you practice the belief that homosexuality is just a living style and is to be tolerated? Do you practice the belief there's no such thing as sin? But all these practicing beliefs, transcendental meditation, cremation, yoga, tolerance to all religions, all gods are the same, reincarnation, integration, homosexuality, miscegenation, usury, etc., are opposite of the laws given us by Yahweh. They are the commands of another God. These practices and beliefs have made great strides in America over my lifetime as they become more and more prominent. The love of the Hindu is uncritical and total. Opposed to that is Christian love, which is one kind only. John 14:15. If you love me, keep my commandments. I am not a Hindu Christian. Next, I am not a Calvinist. To be continued, blessed be the Lord God of Israel.